Welcome to Budget Watchdog, All Federal, the podcast dedicated to making sense of the budget, spending, and tax issues facing the nation. Cut through the partisan rhetoric and talking points for the facts about what's being talked about, bandied about, and pushed in Washington. Brought to you by Taxpayers for Common Sense. And now, the host of Budget Watchdog AF, TCS President Steve Ellis.
Welcome to all American taxpayers seeking common sense. You've made it to the right place. For nearly 30 years, TCS, that's Taxpayers for Common Sense, has served as an independent, nonpartisan budget watchdog group based in Washington, D.C. We believe in fiscal policy for America that is based on facts. We believe in transparency and accountability because no matter where you are on the political spectrum, no one wants to see their tax dollars wasted. Having said that, dear listeners, this week we got our first look at what Congress is thinking of the Pentagon's budget request for fiscal year 2025. On Monday, the House released base text for the National Defense Authorization Act, or NDAA, the bill that authorizes spending for the Pentagon and lets Congress weigh in on national security policy. The bill adheres to budget caps agreed to last year by capping, could you hear those air quotes? Capping national security spending at a whopping $895 billion. But it also makes changes to the Pentagon's budget request that may or may not hold. As the budget process moves forward, will Congress have the fiscal discipline to stick to that cap? And what about the process looks different given that it's an election year? I just want to remind our listeners that one of the things that Congress has been proud of is that an NDAA has been enacted every single year since they first started doing them in the late 1940s. So this is one of the few things that is almost a lock to get done no matter what happens in Congress, whatever happens in the election. It may not be until December 31st, but it's virtually a lock that this bill will get enacted. So joining me now to explore these questions and detail the specific choices on the table is TCS policy analyst Gabe Murphy. Gabe, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
All right, Gabe, let's dig right in. You've been poring over the NDAA so you can help us understand what Congress is up to. Budget Watchdog AF faithful know that the budget caps agreed to last year cap spending at 1% above the previous year. We also know that Congress never stuck to the caps during the 10-year span of the Budget Control Act that ended a few years ago. Does this first stab at the NDAA mean Congress is going to stick to these caps?
Well, no, Steve, it doesn't. Unfortunately, a lot of prominent lawmakers have been openly bashing the budget request for the very fact that it adheres to these caps negotiated last summer between President Biden and then House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. To name a couple, Democrat John Tester of Montana, he's the chair of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense, observed that he wasn't sure if the caps would hold. And Republican Roger Wicker of Mississippi, the ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, which has jurisdiction over the NDAA, said that the budget is blind to the, quote, new Cold War. And as far as the House, when the House released its base text of the NDAA, the House Armed Services Chair, Mike Rogers, a Republican of Alabama, said the bill only adhered to the cap for now to demonstrate how supposedly underfunded the Pentagon is.
Yeesh, not a good sign. Did anybody defend the cap?
Well, the only cooler head I've seen, and there may be others, is Representative Adam Smith of Washington, a Democrat serving as the ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee. He said he's not going down the path of, oh my God, we don't have enough money, we're all going to die, and that roughly $900 billion is enough to work with.
Yeah, it may have been 15 years ago, but then Defense Secretary Gates, who served under both President Bush and President Obama, observed that if they couldn't defend the country on $500 trillion, then their problems couldn't be fixed with more ships or planes. So obviously, that's almost double what he was talking about only 15 years ago, and that really still holds. So hopefully, Congressman Smith can bring some of his colleagues around to his way of thinking. Looking beyond the cap, even though the NDAA sticks for now, Congress didn't just rubber stamp the Pentagon's request, right? What did they change?
Well, Steve, speaking of ships, or in this case, a boat, one of the biggest battles emerging in the NDAA, aside from the battle over the top line amount, is in the Navy's shipbuilding budget. In its request, the Pentagon cut one Virginia-class attack submarine, asking Congress to fund one sub rather than the two it had previously planned on. And the Pentagon is making the case that the shipbuilder wasn't meeting the two sub per year schedule, and that cutting a sub and redirecting some of the funds to support the submarine industrial base would be a better use of funds.
All right, Gabe, so how did Congress take that?
Not too well. They added $1 billion back into the budget to put the sub back in, claiming that dropping the sub sends a mixed signal to the industry about demand, which they argue could hurt the industrial base. In fact, 14 senators sent a letter to the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense calling on leadership to stick to the 2 sub per year approach. And, you know, it should come as no surprise that the leaders of the letter, Senators Murphy and Blumenthal, are both from Connecticut, where the Virginia-class subs are built. And as we all know, Steve, what's good for Connecticut, the nutmeg state, is obviously good for America.
Hear, hear. Those subs are built right across the Thames River from my alma mater, the Coast Guard Academy in New London. But hey, Budget Watchdog AF faithful, before someone writes in to point out that I mispronounced Thames, it's the Thames in London and the Thames in New London. All right, back to the pod. Gabe, how did the bill pay for the extra sub while sticking to the cap?
Well, it looks like they found an extra $1.2 billion by cutting a Constellation-class frigate from the budget, which was running a shocking 3 years behind schedule anyway. You know, a lot of the ships in the shipbuilding budget are behind schedule, but this one is particularly behind, so they decided to go with that one.
Oh, that's not a good sign, considering the Constellation-class frigate is the replacement for the lemon of the fleet, the literal combat ship. Okay, so what else changed from the Pentagon's request to this bill?
So as we highlighted in a previous Budget Watchdog AF on the president's budget request, the request cut the number of planned F-35 purchases from 83 to just 68. That's still a lot, but you know that made a lot of sense to us given that the F-35 is only mission capable about 55% of the time, among other well-documented problems.
All right. That sounds reasonable. That sounds good. What else did HASC, the House Armed Services Committee, do?
Well, so they actually took this cut of the F-35 farther. They axed another 10 planes and blocked buys on 10 additional F-35s until the Pentagon comes up with a plan to address some of the production challenges that have been facing this fighter jet.
Wow, that actually sounds promising. Some accountability. Take that, Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, Steve. I mean, that was my first thought as well. But when I dug a little closer, I do think this actually bears watching. Politico reported that the roughly $1 billion in savings from cutting these 10 planes is going to be redirected to mitigate the F-35's production problems. So it looks like the NDAA is basically as the Pentagon paying the same price for 10 fewer planes by doling out what amounts to yet another industrial-based subsidy. On the one hand, if we're going to keep buying F-35s, we should make sure the planes we're buying work. On the other hand, it's really Lockheed Martin that should be shelling out to fix their production problems, not taxpayers.
Good point. Thanks for that, Gabe. And, you know, I think the other thing to keep in mind here, and I want to remind our Budget Watchdog AF faithful, is that the NDAA is a policy bill. And while it talks about money, in this case, $895 billion worth of money, it actually doesn't appropriate the funds. So that'll all be a job for the Appropriations Committee, but this does set the overall policy picture. And so it's an important bill regardless, but in the end, it doesn't actually cut planes or spend money like the actual Defense Appropriations Bill does.
Right, Steve. And because of the dynamic, we still have yet to see, you know, exactly how they're going to spend this $1 billion. But I will point out that Lockheed Martin spent $1 billion on stock buybacks in the first quarter of 2024. That's money that they could have spent making sure that their F-35s work, but as the industry has come to expect Congress to subsidize its failures, they spent it on boosting shareholder profits instead.
Okay. All right. Putting billions of dollars in savings from the F-35 cut into fixing the F-35's production problems basically gives the industry the green light to keep making crappy products with the knowledge that taxpayers will step in when the problems reach a boiling point. Sounds like a contender for the Golden Fleece for me, but I'll also put on the Pentagon that it seems like they have to keep learning the fly before you buy lesson again and again. All right. So aside from the cuts and adds and the funding tables, what mischief did Congress get up to in the more policy-oriented portions of the bill? As Wendy Jordan, your predecessor in this role at TCS and subject of a previous Budget Watchdog AF podcast, always look at the general provisions.
Always read the general provisions of an appropriations bill because that's where the mischief is.
And to Wendy, I say, aye, aye, ma'am. A couple of things in the general provisions caught my eye, and I did look there specifically because of Wendy's advice. One area was on nuclear weapons. Congress is a big fan, so they stuck some provisions in there to make sure that the Pentagon doesn't get rid of any. Namely, the bill blocks the retirement of the B-83-1, a nuclear gravity bomb that the Biden administration slated for retirement in its nuclear posture review. It also prohibits retirement of the W-76-2 low-yield warhead. That's a warhead that the Trump administration deployed on our ballistic missile submarine fleet. And in case anyone, like yours truly, wants to push for reducing or getting rid of the land-based leg of the nuclear triad, the bill prohibits decreasing the number of deployed ICBMs below 400, the number currently deployed.
Gabe, I think you've got a report coming out soon on the least survivable, redundant leg of the deterrent triad, the ICBMs. Maybe a preview tease for our Budget Watchdog AF faithful?
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. I mean, that report's coming, and it's basically going to say that we found that deterrence can be achieved through a nuclear dyad rather than a triad. We have more than enough deterrent power on our ballistic missile submarines, our nuclear bombers, and our nuclear-capable fighters to deter our adversaries. And the ICBMs are, like we said, the least survivable leg of the triad. So they're a redundancy that is not making us safer. And the plan to revamp them, a program called the Sentinel, is looking like it's going to cost taxpayers $315 billion. So that's an expense we don't need to bear.
Thanks for that. And I'm sure that report will be coming to a podcast near you soon, listeners. All right, Gabe, anything else with the NDAA?
Well, I'll just say one other provision in the general provisions that caught my eye. It requires the implementation of the recommendations of the Commission on Planning, Programming, Budgeting, and Execution Reform. Now, this commission came out with a report in March that's like 400 pages, and it includes a long list of recommendations for improving Pentagon acquisition practices. But among them were various proposals relating to making acquisition more adaptable and flexible. Now, the devil's in the details, Steve. But when we hear those words in the context of Pentagon acquisition, we've come to understand that it's code for less oversight, less transparency, and ultimately more wasteful spending. And the fact that the commission was largely comprised of industry insiders did not assuage our concerns.
Well, Gabe, I mentioned before, fly before you buy, and lots of times stuff like this is code for end running the Office of Test and Evaluation. You mentioned less transparency, and also we talked about Golden Fleece, and earlier we gave a Golden Fleece to the Air Force for one embarrassing lack of transparency on the cost of the B-21 Raider bomber. Budget Watchdog AF faithful, check out our fun video on it with such luminaries as President Reagan. It will be linked to in our transcript that goes along with the podcast. All right, turning back to the NDAA process, what's next now that the base text is out, Gabe?
Well, the Senate is expected to take up the NDAA in June, but next up in the House is the markup in the full committee, the House Armed Services Committee, where committee members will have time for debate on the bill and be able to offer amendments. That's scheduled for May 22nd. Now, typically, before the base text of the bill is released, the subcommittees do their own markups of their portions of the bill, allowing subcommittee members to offer amendments. But leadership opted to skip that process this year. So the full committee markup is going to be the first opportunity that most Armed Services Committee members have to weigh in on the bill.
All right, so that limits input in the committee. What about promises for a more robust amendment process on the floor that we've heard from both former Speaker McCarthy and current Speaker Johnson?
So, Steve, unfortunately, I've been hearing rumblings, at least, that the leadership might try to truncate the process even further by limiting debate and amendments on the House floor later in the year. Now, if that proves true, it would mean most members of the House have no real opportunity to weigh in on the bill text, and that's really a stunningly undemocratic approach to governing more than half of the nation's discretionary budget.
Why limit debate? What's the concern for leadership?
I think it's twofold. One, they don't want a messy fight over the budget caps, which would pit Pentagon spending hawks against fiscal conservatives and showcase the Republican Party's disunity right ahead of the election. And second, they don't want to pick a battle they can't win by allowing a bunch of culture war amendments like they did last year, which would further drag out the process and make it impossible for Democrats to get on board. So either way this goes, because of these dynamics, I think it's likely that Congress is going to punt on the question of the national security top line for this bill until after the election.
Got it. So stepping back, what are your main takeaways from the NDAA and the process so far, Gabe?
First, I'd say, kind of like Secretary Gates, that $895 billion is a whole lot of money. And it doesn't include mandatory spending or emergency supplementals like the $95 billion supplemental passed in April. When you factor those in, we're coming very close to passing the $1 trillion mark on national security spending. That's $1 million, $1,000 billion. Like Representative Smith said, and I would think former Defense Secretary Gates would agree, that's enough to work with. Second, The budget is supposed to represent the priorities of the American people. But how can it if most of the House doesn't get the opportunity to weigh in on more than half of the discretionary budget? That's not how democracy works.
Good point, Gabe. All right, Gabe. Thanks for representing the TCS team on the pod today.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, there you have it, podcast listeners. With our nation's fiscal health hanging in the balance, we'll be watching closely to see if Congress can put our money where its mouth is by sticking to the budget caps. This is The Frequency. Mark it on your dial. Subscribe and share. And know this, Taxpayers for Common Sense has your back, America. We read the bills, monitor the earmarks, and highlight those wasteful programs that poorly spend our money and shift long-term risk to taxpayers. We'll be back with a new episode soon. I hope you'll meet us right here to learn more.